First Samuel, chapter 13. See, I might have a screen here. Then you'll be able to see it. Waiting on the Lord. Again, I hope you avail yourselves of opportunities that God brings. It's good to see Tom Palmer. You've been traveling for a while, and he's back in. The prayer encounter starts on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday for the men. I'll be there all the time. And so any men worried that you're going to be alone, I'll be there. Now, that might scare you away. I'm not sure. But if I'm there, you'll definitely have somebody to talk to, okay? Because I talk to anybody all the time, and I enjoy doing that. So again, looking forward to the prayer encounter. I hope you'll avail yourselves of that. Even if you haven't thought about it, you still have time to get in. And again, it's only up the road, not too far, in a beautiful camp there. So I hope you'll avail yourself to that. Let me alert you to something else. And again, you think about things, you don't know what to say, you don't know what will come back on you or whatever. But I told you a while ago that two movies were coming out, and the one movie was recommended, the Son of God movie on the life of Jesus. And maybe some of you availed yourself to see it. It was recommended. I read one statement where somebody didn't like a little thing in it or whatever, but I didn't think it was bad enough that it should be announced that that was a bad movie. And it seems to be a fairly consistent with the Bible. They added one or two little things that I'd rather they hadn't have added, I've heard. But again, you'll get the story of Jesus in that. Told you that movie was Noah was coming out and told you never go see that one. Okay, hopefully you've listened. But no Christians to go see the movie Noah. I think the only thing Christian about the movie Noah is the word Noah. Okay? And then from there, maybe the word ark. But from there, it does not follow the Bible at all. It is all imaginative, made up, and it doesn't follow anything according to the Bible. Okay, so I would tell people not to do that. Let me go on a limb here and give you another one now. There's another movie out there that you might want to consider. If you don't go to movies, I'm not telling you to go. Wait till it comes out on Blu-ray, DVD, or whatever it does, or whatever. But the God Is Not Dead movie. It's good. It's good, folks. It's going to answer a lot of questions that you might have that people ask you. It's an apologetics movie. That might be scary to some of you. It's a movie about how to defend our faith. And let me tell you, there is a boy in the story. There's a lot of stories in it. Again, I did go see it. I'm not going to hide it from you. We went to Texas, and a group of us went to go see it. And then we were able to enter discussions and talk about it. But again, it's about a young person who goes off to college, and he's challenged in his faith. And his answers and what he does in that movie, most Christians have no idea how to answer what he did. When people challenge your faith, we just like, I didn't know what to say. But if you pay attention to this movie and listen to what this young man did, it is a wonderful movie on apologetics and how to defend your faith. Now, again, I was interested in it because we have been teaching the book, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, which is an apologetics book in my Sunday school class. And I was so glad I read that book before I went to the movie because, man, it was really great to see what he did with how our book goes and it lined up. I tell you, it's a good movie to go to. If you see things in the movie that you say, well, I don't know if I approved of that, that's okay. Okay? Because, the main thing of the movie is the apologetics. And what it is, we are getting beat down as Christians because we're just not keeping up with how to defend our faith. And we need to know how to do it. And if you pay attention and follow this man's thinking and watch the movie, you will be encouraged. Okay? And the next time somebody comes up to you and says, well, I don't believe there's a God, you have an answer for them. I know how to answer you. And again, I'm prepared to do this. Again, if you don't go to movies, I'm not telling you to go against your convictions or however you do it. But this movie is worth your time. If you want to go, you could go. And again, to learn more about how to defend your faith. Again, I tell people, it's also good for young people because when you head off to certain colleges, you don't know what you're going to run into. You are not going to believe what you're going to run into. And at the end of the movie, they have listed all the court cases that Christians have had to defend themselves for being religiously discriminated on college campuses. I mean, it's a lot of them. And basically, somebody says, well, what is that? I tried to look into a couple of them. Basically, as a Christian, you took a course. And because you were a Christian and could not sign a statement of agreement with the professor, he flunked you. And from there, you probably had to drop out of the college. And then young people had to sue the college to try to get back in. They don't always win. And the only reason you got flunked out of college is because you were a Christian. Wow. Now, I do have one answer to that. So why are you going to that kind of college? when there's really a lot of good ones that do teach it. But again, this is something that's happening. I've said enough. It's worth your time if you go to learn some of the things that are in the movie. Again, you'll be highly encouraged by what you hear. And that's only one part of the movie. There's a whole mess of it. There's a lot of other things that are encouraging as a Christian. And again, I just have one thing for you. God's not dead. He's alive, folks, and he's working well in this world right now. And we need to get on board with him. He doesn't need our help, but he asks for it. He doesn't need it, but he's just looking for people to work through. And that's what we need to be, willing servants to let God work through us so the glory goes to him and not to us, because we're just nothing, but he's everything in our lives. I want to talk about waiting on the Lord. Kind of goes along with what I just ended with. I want to tell a story as an introduction and then tell you about what waiting on the Lord is. I'm in 1 Samuel 13. You may know the story. It says there that Saul reigned 1 year, and when he reigned 2 years over Israel, Saul chose him 3,000 men of Israel, of which 2,000 were with Saul in Michmash and Mount Bethel, and 1,000 were with Jonathan, that's Saul's son. So the father had 2,000 men with him, and the Jonathan, his son, had 1,000 men with him, and they were in Gibeah of Benjamin. And the rest of the people, those who did not make the 3,000-man army, he sent every man back to his tent. So Saul has looked for recruits, chose him out 3,000 men, and the rest of the men who did not make the army headed on back to their tents. Notice, Jonathan took his position as a general seriously. He smote the garrison of the Philistines that was in Geba, and the Philistines heard of it. Again, at this point in time, as Saul is king, the Philistines are kind of moving throughout the land as much as they want, stealing things, plundering, making life terrible for the Israelites. And Jonathan gets 1,000 men, and he says, it's a time to fight. So he gets his 1,000 men together, and he goes over there to Geba, where the Philistines had set up shop, and he attacks them, and he smote them and sent them running home. Okay. So again, verse 3, Jonathan smote the garrison of the Philistines that was in Geba. The Philistines heard of it, and Saul blew the trumpet throughout all the land, saying, let the Hebrews hear. And all Israel heard, again, say that Saul had smitten the garrison of the Philistines, and that Israel also was had in an abomination with the Philistines, and the people were called together after Saul to Gilgal. Now again, here's what's happening. It's been a long time. It's been a long time since there's been a victory over the Philistines. Most of these peoples, not in their lifetime, though it has happened in some of these people's lifetime. But all of a sudden, Jonathan mounts an attack. He is successful. They blow the trumpet. Okay, we've won a battle. But you notice what they did here, because it says that they were had in abomination of the Philistines. You know what that means? It made them mad. It made them mad. And it was sort of like this way, okay? You took 1,000 men, and you attacked one of our garrisons that maybe didn't have that many men. You overpowered us in a certain little place. You don't want to mess with us. You made us mad. Notice what happens then in verse 5. And the Philistines gathered themselves together to fight with Israel. 30,000 chariots and 6,000 horsemen and people as the sand which is on the seashore in multitude. And they came up and pitched in Michmash east of Bethaven. What did they do? They went and got the fighting men. Okay, you want to attack our little garrison? We had an outpost there and you kind of beat us back home. We're coming up with a full army. We're coming up with everything we've got. And pretty much as you read the verse, as a scout was set out by the Israelites to say, well, how many Philistines are coming? The answer came back, I can't count them all. I can't count them all. Now, right now, Saul has in his army how many men? 3,000. Okay? 3,000. Now, he's going to blow the trumpet and says, hey, you know all you guys that went home? Come back. I know I didn't choose you, but come back. Because you know what? We are in trouble. All of the Philistines are coming with all of their might. Look at verse 9. And when the men of Israel saw that they were in a strait, for the people were distressed, then the people did hide themselves in caves and in thickets and among rocks and in high places and in pits. Notice, folks, they didn't stand up and make a battle line and say, okay, we're ready to fight. Now, I believe this is how it worked. they looked at the chariots and they said, we got to go find a place where those chariots can't get us. Do you notice all the places where they were hiding? Folks, they left the battlefield. We're not going to go into the field of battle. Because if we go into the battlefield, what's going to happen? Chariots are coming. And we don't have any chariots. It's sort of like tanks versus infantrymen. Okay? Not something you want to put up with. Not something that sounds like a fair fight. So they went and hid themselves. Now, again, it's been known throughout the book of Judges and coming into 1 Samuel that basically God was the God of the mountains. But he was not the God of the valleys. That's how the people in the nations around Israel looked at Israel. Oh, your God is a God of the mountains, because when you guys gather for war, you all sit up on top of the mountains. But you won't come down and fight in the valleys. Because if you came down and fought in the valleys, in the open areas, what would happen? Here come the chariots, and they'd mop up the Israelites. Well, they didn't want to take the chariots up in the mountains because the Israelites had the advantage. So they just basically called God the God of mountains, because the Israelites did not want to come down into the valleys and fight. And no, sure enough, you can see that these people are hiding themselves in thickets and all the places where the chariots can't go. Notice it says in verse 7, and some of the Hebrews went over the Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. As for Saul, he was yet in Gilgal, and all the people followed him trembling. Some of the people even said, you know what, just hiding in the woods and in the caves and among the rocks, that's not good enough for us. We're crossing the river and getting out of here. Because kind of hard for chariots to do what? Cross rivers. So we're not even going to hide in the woods. We're heading out of here. Over the Jordan River, Gad, Gilead. Because you know what? All these chariots, there's nothing we can do here. This is terrible. Now, I come to you and just make you think about this. You're in the Israelite army. You look out there. You see all those chariots. What are you thinking? Yeah, we got this. Piece of cake. No problem. What are you thinking if you're Israelite? We're dead. There is nothing we can do here. I mean, anybody who even ventures out of the woods, anybody who even ventures out of a ditch or out of the caves or the pits, they're just going to mop us up. Those chariots are terrible. We're in a terrible time here. And sure enough, as you look at it here, if I can just put it this way to you, this is one of the times, there's others in the Bible, but this is one of the times in the Bible when Israel is literally at a huge disadvantage. There's not much they can do in this situation. I mean, you look at it, the battle plans, there's not much they can do. Notice then verse 8, and we're talking about Saul here, because he was there in Gilgal. And he tarried 7 days according to the set time that Samuel had appointed. Again, here's how it works. It's easy. Saul goes to Samuel the prophet and said, what are we going to do? I mean, Jonathan made this attack. We won. All of a sudden, here they come with everything they've got. They're angry. They're upset. They're going to annihilate us. What are we going to do? Here was Samuel's instructions. I'll be there in 1 week. You'll wait for me. I'll be there in a week. Okay? 7 days, I'll come. Now, you imagine Saul here. You're watching. Those chariots are right over there. They're not far away. You do the geography here because this place is mentioned there. They're not that far away. You're looking at your people. You don't see any of them. Most of them are hiding. Some of them have hightailed it across the Jordan River. They're not even in the battle. You know, and every day, more people run. So first day, where's Samuel? He's not here. Second day, third day. Are you counting the days? And every day when you go out and give a number, you find out that your numbers are even smaller. And you might ask the question, well, how many chariots left and went back to Philistia? What's the answer? None. And yet your men are getting smaller and smaller. And Samuel just said, I'll be there in a week. Within the week, I'll be there. We'll know what to do. That's what his answer is. Notice then, if you will, in verse 8, I'll read it again. He tarried 7 days according to the set time that Samuel had appointed. But Samuel came not to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. And Saul said, bring hither a burnt offering to me, and peace offerings, and he offered the burnt offering. And it came to pass that as soon as he had made an end offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came. And Saul went out to meet him, that he might salute him. And Samuel said, what hast thou done? What was the instructions? Wait a week. I'll be there. Now, I want you to understand that you get this, all right? Samuel came within the week. On the seventh day, Saul basically finally said, we can't wait any longer. Our troops are getting smaller. They're still over there. They're anxious for a fight. I just can't wait any longer. I got to do something. So he said, basically, bring me the burnt offering. Bring me the peace offering. We're going to start things, and we're going to find out what to do. Sure enough, he does the offering. And I tried to read here, and I really had trouble with this. Did Saul offer them himself, or did he use a Levite and a priest to do it? I'm not so sure that he, and some commentators think that maybe he did the offering himself, but I don't think he did. I think he used a Levite or a priest. He didn't intrude into the priest's office. I don't think he did. Because other men who tried to do that got leprosy instantly. Did you know that? He didn't get sick. But again, he just didn't wait for Samuel. And sure enough, as soon as he was done, he turns around. Who's standing there? And guess what Samuel is? On time. He's not late. Hey, I told you I'd be here in a week. And his first question's out as he comes up there. He says in verse 11, what have you done? Notice what Saul says. Because I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that thou camest not within the days appointed, and the Philistines gathered themselves together at Michmash, therefore said I, the Philistines will come down now upon me to Gilgal, and I have not made supplication on the Lord. I forced myself, therefore, and offered a burnt offering. Notice what happens here. And this is the trend of Saul. It's a trend. It's going to go throughout his life. Whenever he does anything wrong, he explains it away of why he did it. Now, folks, let's not stomp on him too bad. Guess who else does that all the time? We do. You know, we just come up with reasons why we do things when we know they're wrong. Again, the next king after Saul, when he did something wrong and it was pointed out, what did he do? Repented. See the difference? By the way, I'll take you to the end, if you will. Go with me to verse 14. Because God says, basically, the Lord has sought him a man after his own heart. See, there's the difference between Saul and David. It's not that one of them was holier than the other. It's not that one was better than the other. It's not that one was more good than the other. Are you following me through? Oh, David, he was such a good person. Folks, did David do things wrong? And the things that he did wrong, were they just little? No. But here's the difference. He stepped in the mud. He got into sin. And when it was found out and brought to his attention, or God brought it to his attention, what did he do? He repented. And he didn't come up with excuses why he did it. And he used words. I mean, you can go to what? Psalm 32 and Psalm 51, where he literally says, I have sinned. And he goes to God and asks for forgiveness. That's the difference between David and Saul. Saul gets caught. What have you done, Saul? Man, he's got a whole list. I didn't want to do it, but I had to do it. You forced my hand. I had to come up with a plan. And sure enough, he came up with a plan and he did it. Notice verse 13. Samuel said to Saul, thou hast done foolishly. Now let's stop right here for a minute. That's the word that needs to be said. Foolishly. Psalms 14:1. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. The word foolish isn't a word that just means sort of silly. You kind of did a silly little thing. And we kind of think sometimes that the word foolish is not so bad. If we want to mention something that's bad, we use the word wicked, terrible, Are you with me? An abomination. See, foolish is over here. It's just a cute little sinful word. And wicked and abomination and all that are over here. Can I tell you? Pick that word foolish up from being over here and move it over here. When you are said to be foolish in the Bible, you have entered into a huge sin. And you know what it is? It is living your life without God. How worse does it get? The fool said in his heart, there is no God. Saul literally said, I got to do something here. And he launched into his own plan, which wasn't God's plan. He literally said, we're going to do this my way. And he left God out of it. Now, if he would have left God in the plans, what would he have been doing? While he was offering the sacrifices, what would he have been doing instead with that time? Waiting. Waiting for what? Samuel. And a few minutes later, when Samuel would have showed up, Samuel would have said, you've done the right thing. Now, let's find out what God wants us to do. In fact, maybe he wouldn't have said, let's find out. Maybe he would have said, God's already told me what we're going to do here. And Saul, this is what we're going to do. But he acted foolishly. He basically took his life into his own hands and left God out of everything. We're just going to go ahead and do it Saul's way. Because, see, Samuel didn't come. He didn't wait for him. And so, sure enough, he's done that. Notice the punishment that came for this. It wasn't an immediate punishment. Okay. Again, thou hast done foolishly. I'm in verse 13. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God, which he commanded thee. For now would the Lord have established thy kingdom upon Israel forever, but now thy kingdom shall not continue. The Lord hath sought him a man after his own heart, and the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee. Again, the punishment is not immediate. It is something that is going to come down in the future. But what he is saying is, Saul, your house will not retain the kingdom forever. God's going to take it from your house. And we usually call these like dynasties or families or whatever. But it's going to be moved from your family to somebody else's family. And God's going to find him a man that when he does get caught doing something wrong, he knows how to repent instead of making excuses for it. And we know, as we know the history of the Bible, that Saul died about 38 years later, and his son did not become the next king. They tried to put a son on the throne. It didn't work. But God had already chosen him a man, and that man's name was David. And David had a heart after God. And the promise that was not kept, what Saul was not able to achieve was basically an eternal dynasty. It was given to David. And David's family ruled on Israel and will continue to rule forever as Jesus Christ is the son of David. And he will take the throne of Israel and rule forever. And so we have here a man that did foolishly. He took things into his own hands and did it his own way. Now, I'm speaking, you can see it on the screen up there, on wait on the Lord. I use this story because here's a man that didn't wait on Samuel, but in essence, he didn't do what? Wait on the Lord. And I just want to go through literally what wait on the Lord means, okay? To wait, okay? Now watch. Here's what it means to wait. To pause and soberly consider your inadequacy. Waiting is just not sitting there. There's a few things that go with why we're sitting there. And number one is, I'm inadequate. I don't have the means to do the task at hand. Follow the story through. Saul has a number of men. Most have run. And their job is they've got to defeat 30,000 chariots. Besides 6,000 horsemen. Besides so many infantrymen, we can't even what? Count them. That's the job. And Saul needed to realize, I can't do this. There is nothing that I can do. None of my plans will work. And he literally, if he would have, and I think this is how it goes, if he literally would have understood I am inadequate to take on this task, he would have been able to sit 7 full days. Yeah, he saw, why don't you do something? You know I'm not going to do anything? Because I can't. There's absolutely nothing to do. I mean, we've been sitting here for 7 days thinking of things, and they're all kind of no good. Not going to work. So, let's just wait, because that's what Samuel said to do. Because Any plan that we come up with, it's not going to work. However, in your meditating, in your thinking, you need to understand, though I am all inadequate, God is all what? Sufficient. I got a question for you. 30,000 chariots. What's that to God? That's nothing. That's absolutely nothing. God can take care of 30,000 chariots as if it was nothing. He's all sufficient. I mean, God doesn't even have to think that I've got to get some reserves here. I've got to get more power. God said, I don't need to store up some more power. I'm all sufficient for this task at hand. So again, waiting, and if you understand these two points here, it will help you to be a better waiter. Can I put those words out there? Well, why are you just sitting there? Because there's nothing I can do. But I know a God that can do everything. So I'm just going to wait here and let Him handle what's going on here. Again, moving on from the idea. So what we're going to do is we're going to seek counsel. I don't know what to do. I have no idea what to do. Dr. Bob Jones Sr. Was a man who came up with a lot of different quotes. One of the quotes I seem to come up with more than anything is this quote. He said, he made a quote like this: you can't borrow character, but you can borrow brains. Okay? What you're supposed to be for God, that's you. Okay? Don't feel that people in your family make who you are. Okay? That's you. But if you don't know what to do, seek counsel. Get some brains. I tell you what, there's a lot of times in my life people ask me, what are you going to do? I'm going to ask somebody. Okay? I'm one of these people. Now, I know it's one of these things for men that when you're a man out there, you don't ask directions. Okay? I do. Okay? I do. I mean, I'm in a car that gets at best 15 miles per gallon. I'm not driving around forever. Okay? I'm going to go ahead and get some directions. The Monday when we were heading to Dallas, okay, a while at Dallas, and our plane didn't go out. We were stuck in, Greensburg, Pennsylvania. Anybody been to Greensburg? I never have. I've never been there. You know, I told my wife and I, we got a whole day in Greensburg, you know, and we said, well, let's go shopping. What else do you do? You know, let's go shopping. So we went shopping. We asked some people where some stores were, and they just like pointed. You know, so we drove down there. After a while, my wife said, I don't think those stores are here. I said, I don't think they're either. I pulled into like one of those AMPMs and asked somebody, where's the stores? Oh, I realized I was lost. Okay. And they helped me get to the stores. I figured if I wouldn't have done that, now I had my little GPS or whatever, but we were having fun driving around, talking to people. That's even better, is it not? But I'm not afraid to ask people, hey, how am I supposed to do this? You know? Because I didn't know where I was. In fact, I'm going to tell you something. When the lady pointed on the road, she said this. Now, this is what she did to me. She goes, you need to head east. I thought that way was east. I really did. I thought I was heading east when she told me, well, you need to head east. And I'm like, okay. You know, you almost want to say, well, that's what I was doing. I just didn't go far enough. I was heading, okay. I was heading to Ohio, man. That's not where I wanted to go. But get counsel. Hey, you know what? I don't know what I'm doing here. I'm totally inadequate. Let's get some help. Now, I have an all-sufficient God. Wouldn't that be where I turn there or whatever? Again, that's where your counsel comes. It comes from the Lord. Okay? And then I'm going to just put it this way. Now, let's put all our hope in Him. Let's put all our hope in Him. I can't do it. The task is too big. I am inadequate. God is all-sufficient, all-powerful. God, what do you want me to do? You tell me what to do. I will do it no matter what you say, Lord, because I even need, once you even tell me what to do, I need your help to do it. That's what waiting on the Lord is. I did something here, and a lot of Bibles, instead of using the phrase wait on the Lord, they've changed it to hope in the Lord. They believe that the word hope in our English language signifies a little stronger what it means to hope in the Lord. And again, I can understand it. I don't hope in myself. You know, I don't look at you and say, well, Pastor, what are we going to do? Trust me. I know what I'm doing. Just hope in me and you'll be okay. You know, that's not it. Pastor, what are we going to do? No. But what we're going to do is go find out what God wants. And then this hope is not a hope of, you know, our word hope is weak, and I hope it happens. Hope is a confidence that it is going to happen. And then we're going to put our hope in the Lord. And it's going to happen. And that's what it means. So again, you put your hope in God. So again, I go back through this. We're inadequate. God is all sufficient. We're going to go seek His counsel. And whatever He says to do, we're going to do it with His strength is what we're going to do. Again, let's go to some verses. Psalm 33, please. Psalm 33, we're not coming back to 1 Samuel. So you don't need to put a bookmark there, but we're going to go to Psalm 33, please. Psalm 33, starting at verse 20. I believe I had this on the bulletin, did I not? Our soul waiteth for the Lord because we know we're insufficient. He is all powerful. We're going to go wait for Him. He is our help and our shield. For our heart shall rejoice in Him because we have trusted in His holy name. Let Thy mercy, O Lord, be upon us according as we hope in Thee. This is the definitions of waiting on God. I can't do it. I need Your strength, Your mercy, Your grace. I can't do anything. And when You finally tell me what to do, then You've got to give me the strength or the mercy to do it. Because, Lord, without You, I can do absolutely nothing. Go with me, if you will. We're in the book of Psalms, so we're going to go over to the 88th Psalm, please. Go to the 88th Psalm. Get to the 88th Psalm. It's a sad little verse. What a sad verse to sing in a song. If the Psalms are songs, then this is a sad verse to sing, is it not? Okay? Psalm 88:13. Okay? See if I got the right, maybe I don't have the right one here. I have written down, it's supposed to be, they soon forgot His works. Did I get that? And they waited not for His counsel. I think I've given you the wrong verse, have I not? If anybody can find it, let me know what it is. But I have around here the Psalm 88:13 supposed to be, they soon forgot His works. I'm sorry. They waited not for His counsel. Anybody know where that verse is? I must have counted something down wrong when I was studying this week or whatever. Again, they forgot His works. We forgot how strong God is. So instead of trusting in Him, we're going to go ahead and do what? We're going to go ahead and do it our way. Now I'm a little nervous about this. But again, here's how we go. In not seeking and waiting for God, we rob God of an opportunity to glorify Himself. Think about that statement for a little while. You know what, God? I got it. I don't need You. Okay? And then I go out and do it. Now watch this. Okay? And later somebody goes, hey, Pastor, wow! I saw what you did. How'd you do that? You just don't know who I am, do you? Yes? 106 verse 13? Thank you. Okay, 106:13. It's been a long time since I've done that, has it not? I don't know. I'm making excuses now. It's sad when you do it, though. When you get to it, you're like, ah, got the wrong verse. Thank you so much. 106 verse 13. Again, I know it's there. I didn't make it up. They soon forgot His works. They waited not for His counsel. Okay? Boy, you know, I'm strong. I can do this on my own. God gets no glory out of that. God gets no glory out of that. Again, I love David. I don't think it was little David when he took on Goliath. But even when David was looking at Goliath, what did he say? He didn't say, hey, I'm taking you out. What did he say? You've defied God, and I come to you in the name of God, and He is going to take care of you. That's paraphrased. You know what? And when David was done doing that, everybody knew it was a big God. Because David was inadequate to the task. He was too small to take on a guy like that and win. Again, we rob God of that. Again, what we do is we want to do it our way, do we not? Go with me to Isaiah 30. Now I'm scared every reference I put up there now, am I not? Isaiah chapter 30. Look what these people did. Isaiah chapter 30. Again, if you know the book of Isaiah, Isaiah is telling Israel, destruction is coming at the hands of the Babylonians. Destruction is coming. If you don't get right with me, if you don't repent, destruction is coming. Look what these people say then. Isaiah 30, look at verse 15. For thus saith the Lord God, the Holy One of Israel, in returning and rest shall ye be saved. Now watch this. Isaiah's out there preaching and saying, this is what God says. If you return to God and stop worshiping idols, you will find rest and you will be saved. The Babylonians will not come and get you. Return to God. He will save you. You will have rest. That's what comes from God. Notice, you will be rest. You'll be saved in quietness and in confidence shall be your strength, but ye would not. Are you getting the sermon? Isaiah says, if you people return to God, He'll save you. He'll give you rest and quietness. Again, He will give you everything you need, but you won't return to Him. What do you want to do? But ye said, no, for we will flee upon horses. Therefore shall we flee, and we will ride upon the swift. What are they saying here? We're going to keep serving our idols. We're going to keep doing what we want to do. And when we see the Babylonians coming, oh, I got this fast horse. And as soon as I see them coming, I'm jumping on the horse and I'm out of here and they're not going to get me. Now, I have a question for you. If you study a few years later, what happened? The Babylonians came. How many people got away? None. See, I got it all planned. I don't need God. I got a fast horse. Oh, some trust in chariots. Some trust in horses. What's the rest of it? Well, we will trust in the name of the Lord our God. And all those people that trusted in fast horses died. They died. Now, again, when I say they all died, they didn't all die. People like Jeremiah, who fell upon the Lord and said, God, help us, they were saved. But almost everybody else died. Oh, I got a fast horse. See, that's not waiting on the Lord. That's, I got a plan here. What's the plan? Got a fast horse. What's your plan? What's your plan? You got a plan? Don't be foolish. What's the word foolish mean? To leave God out of it. I've got to keep moving on. Go to Isaiah chapter 30, please. Isaiah chapter, we're in 30, I guess. Just moving down a few more verses. Look at verse 18, please, okay? Notice what it says. And therefore will the Lord wait, that ye may be gracious unto you. And therefore will he be exalted, that he may have mercy upon you, for the Lord is a God of judgment. Blessed are all they that wait for Him. The word I got to tell you about is the word judgment here. I know that when we read the word judgment, we think it means to get punished. That's not what this word means. This word here means God always makes the right choice. That's what it means. So when you read that God is a God of judgment, don't you think He's paddling people and beating people up? What it means is God always makes the right choice. So read that in there. God is a God who always makes the right decision. Blessed are all they that wait for what? Him. Oh, I got a situation here. I don't know what to do. Well, let's turn to God, because God always knows what to do. And blessed are those who wait on Him and put their hope in Him. Again, just moving on here. When we don't wait for God, we forfeit the blessing of having Him work for us. Think of the times in the Bible where the Israelites were in a bad way and they didn't even have to do anything. God just took care of them. Again, moving on. The sin of not waiting is that we oppose God's will. I don't want to do it your way, God. My way's better. I got a fast horse. I got a big bank account. I got a plastic credit card. I don't need God. I can handle anything that comes at me. You know what? God's like, you're out of my will because I have other things I want you to do. God is not looking for people to work for Him. Now, sometimes you might hear preachers, oh, we need more workers around here. God's not looking for people to work for Him. He's looking for people who will let Him work for them, for Him. Again, I put it this way. I just use the testimony this way. As a pastor, there are times I come into situations and I have no idea what to do and I don't know how to do it. There are. There are times, you know, that might disappoint you as your pastor. Well, our pastor, he's so smart, he knows everything. He always knows what to do. Whoa, not me. I'm scared to death half the time. Sometimes I just have to come to God and say, God, I have no idea what to do. But I'll do whatever you ask me to. I'll do whatever you nudge me to do. And Lord, when I'm doing it, you do it through me. You make sure that you're the one that's doing the work. Again, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So God's aim is not to exalt Himself by working for those who wait for Him. It is His aim. I mean, to work for those who wait for Him. What did He say in Ezekiel? I just look for a man to make up the hedge, stand in the gap. Just somebody. You don't have to be qualified. You don't have to be talented. Just, I need somebody. Somebody steps forward. He's a little guy. So little when they put the king's armor on him at what? It didn't fit, and yet that little guy went out and killed a 10-foot-tall giant. Wow, that's pretty good. God just says, I'm just looking for people. For example, the gospel commands us to give up and hang out a help wanted sign. I like this. You know when I finally got saved was? When I realized I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I tried to be good. Anybody here ever try to be good? My parents all the time told me to act good. Why did my parents tell me to act good? Because I was bad. Okay? My parents never had to tell me to act bad. Because I just was. All right? You know, when I got saved, literally what I did is I came to God and said, God, I'm a sinner, and there's nothing I can do about it. I've tried. I'm a miserable failure. I know if I die now, I'm going to hell. Because my sins are ever before me, and I can't get rid of one of them. God, do something and help me. And he did. He'd already sent Jesus Christ to die on the cross, and when I finally came and said, God, I can't do anything on my own. Isn't that the way service is also? You might look at something and say, well, God, I can't do it. And God says, that's what I'm looking for. Now that I finally got you admitting you can't do it, now I got you in the right place, I will work through you. Again, service. I can do what? All things through Christ who strengthens me. Okay? I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. You know? Well, what are you going to do? I don't know. Well, Pastor, were you trained in this? Nope. Can I tell you something about being a pastor? Most of the stuff that you get involved in the pastorate, they didn't teach you in college. Did anybody know that? They taught me the Bible. They really did a good job of teaching me the Bible. But they didn't teach me a whole lot of other stuff. Okay? They really didn't. You know? But I tell people, they taught me about God. That helps with the rest. I can do all things through Christ that strengthens me. Again, I'm just going to put down here because I got to finish up. I really do. I'm sorry. A lot of things going this morning. But again, how does all this work? Okay? Get this, folks. How does all this work? Prayer is the essential activity of waiting for God. Now, I'm just going to stop and tell you this. If you don't talk to God every day about your life and what's going on, you are acting foolishly. You are just going through the day like he doesn't even exist. Okay? That's really what it is. I mean, you let God know how inadequate you are and how powerful he is because of your conversations with him. That's what it comes down to. Okay? Now, if you get out of bed in the morning and you stretch up and you go, boy, God, I don't think I need you today. All right. You know what you need to do when you get out of bed in the morning? God, I'm scared about today. I don't know what today holds. But you do. You're all sufficient. I'm waiting on you, which means I'm just going to listen to you and do what you tell me to do. And Lord, then when you tell me what to do, you got to do it for me because I'm not weak. I just need you to do it. Again, we need to acknowledge our helplessness. We read in John 15, you're saying, well, why did Bob Corder read John 15? Okay. Well, did you read verses in there? Without me, you can do nothing. You better be the vine. Excuse me. You better be the branch that's hooked into the vine. I love this. When Jesus looked at the Pharisees and they were wondering about things, he says, knowest thou not that thou art wretched? This is the Laodicean church in Revelation chapter 3. These are people who thought they were rich and had everything. And basically Jesus told them, knowest thou not that thou art wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked? We don't need God in this church. We got everything we need. And God says, no, you're not. You're blind. You're miserable. You're poor. You're naked. You don't know anything. You need God. We need to acknowledge his power. Jesus told the Pharisees, you know what? You're wrong. You don't know the scriptures or the power of God. Folks, do you know the power of God? With God, there's nothing that's impossible. He can do everything. 30,000 chariots, nothing. Can handle them as if they were absolutely nothing. We acknowledge our hopelessness. We acknowledge his power. We seek his counsel. Folks, this is your prayer life. Dear God, this is Rick. 6 o'clock here this morning. I'm checking in with you. I can't make it through the day without you. And if I try to make it through the day without you, I'm going to make a mess of it. I know that you can handle everything that comes out of me today. Lord, please direct my path. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Trust in the Lord with all thy heart. Lean not to thy own understanding. And all thy ways acknowledge him and what? Direct your path. He's a God of judgment. He knows the right decisions and everything that comes to me today. He knows exactly what I do. I want to seek his counsel, and then I need to call upon him for help. You know what, God? Help me today. Okay? I come back to this, and just everything. Well, all I'm going to do this morning, God, is get in my car and drive up to church. Do you know the most dangerous activity you are going to do today is what? Drive to church. I know a lot of you say, well, Pastor, I was really praying for you when we got on that airplane. What did you pray for me when I drove out to the airplane? That was more dangerous than the airplane. Is anybody with me on that? It really is. How many people in here have ever been really in an airplane accident? Okay. I think my dad was in one a little dangerous there. But how many people here have been in a car accident? Yeah, right by your house too, right? You heard about the guy, you know, you all know this joke, right? You heard about a guy who said most car accidents happen within 10 miles of your home. He moved. Okay. But I tell people this, where I lived in Massachusetts, if you took a 1 mile circle and drove it around my house, probably in the time that we were there, 20 people died in car accidents in that circle. We were like, wow, whenever you drive out Union Avenue, look, kids, you look both ways. People die there all the time. And I tell people, you think this is a dangerous place. I'm right about this time, don't I? People died all the time. Right in front of the church, a guy parked the tractor trailer. Okay? A car was going slow, so a motorcycle thought he'd pass him in the lane on the right. Pulled out at 90 miles an hour and slammed right in the back of his tractor trailer in front of our church. But nothing left. Okay? Church was within a mile of my house. God, I need your help. I'm driving to church today. Do you know what could happen? Yeah. People find out. Packers, you found out what could happen. Right there, right? Not far from home. God, I need your help. Don't ever go into any activity. God, I got this. I got this. No, God, I need your help. I need it right now. Last screen, we're done. Prayer is the antidote for self-confidence. This is how I'm going to put it this way. If you went through a day and didn't pray much, you are too self-confident. You're trusting in yourself. You're a Saul. I can do this. I got to come up with a plan. There's 30,000 chariots, so I got to do something. Folks, if you go through a day and you're praying, then you are confident in God. And your self-confidence, that's okay. You don't need it. And by the way, don't we teach a lot of self-esteem and self-confidence and all that stuff? Forget it! Because I'm nothing. It's all about God. Folks, wait on the Lord. I haven't said this verse, but my favorite verse in the entire Bible, my life verse. Everybody know what it is? Isaiah 40:31. Whew. There it is on my tie today. I wonder why I wore that tie today. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. And they shall walk and not faint. But folks, it's telling God, I'm not sufficient. I am weak. I can't do anything. You are all powerful. Lord, guide me with your counsel. Give me your strength to get through this day. And only that way can we do it. Father, I pray you might help us to wait on you every day. Lord, when we get out of bed, before our feet even hit the floor, may we have whispered our first prayer. Lord, or maybe said it out loud. Lord, I'm scared about the day. I need your help. Lord, when 30,000 chariots are coming against us, help us not to go to the drawing board. Lord, help us to get on our knees on the floor. And Lord, rely on your power to get us through. Lord, may we start examining each day to see how much we really do pray. Because you've told us to pray without ceasing. Just whisper prayers here and there and everywhere. Lord, to help us in every situation in life. Lord, thank you for this congregation. They understand. Lord, I understand, but sometimes I have trouble putting us all into practice. Lord, help me to do it. In Jesus' name, amen.